Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. The single group in the world that Jews are most concerned about, other than just white people, is white males. And Jews don't like white men speaking, and it's white men that also have to lead the charge in saving our civilization. Ultimately, if men are men, women will be women. So I thought I'd do a quick show with a couple of guys that I know personally. They're all Americans. The one guy is Bob, who used to work with Tom Metzger. And then we've got Brandt and Mike, and we were having a bit of a chat. Bob, are there any things of great importance or things of importance that you'd like to lead with?
Well, the all-important thing is the Jew War, and it trumps everything else. Every other aspect that doesn't directly lead into resolving the Jew War is a distraction. That's all I'll say on that.
Yeah, we've got a serious parasite problem. I think as a race, that's the big problem that I see, and the Jew being the prime original parasite, the father of all other parasites.
Jan, I have something I noticed probably in part because of your mismanagement episode. And I was thinking a sort of a hypothesis that we're always going to have gullible members of our society and our group, our race. But who is managing them? Is it within our own nation, within our own group, or is it an outside source, or is it a saboteur or parasite? And I have been also watching recently these episodes on YouTube by people trying to catch these Indian scam call centers that are stealing billions of dollars from mostly from American white senior citizens by pretending to be Microsoft or pretending to be a government agency or whatever, and they engage the person into some sort of scam and end up either taking their money directly or causing them to, you know, go to the bank and transfer the people money. And I was thinking about that in terms of these people are obedient. They don't want to be in any kind of trouble. The victims I'm talking about, they don't want to be in any kind of trouble. So the scam caller, a lot of the versions of the scam is, oh, you're in some kind of trouble and you have to resolve this trouble. And so they don't stop and say, wait a minute, who's doing this? Is this coming from outside our country? Is this somebody I know? Why do I have to go to the bank and get $5,000 and put it in a shoebox to resolve a border, dispute where they make up some story that a car was found in their name or something like that? And then I connected that to the people that sadly took the vaccine, and many of which are now injured or dead. And I thought about your mismanagement episode, and it kind of clicked. And I said, it's mismanagement, but it's also saboteur management or parasite management in both of those cases, coming from the outside, taking advantage of gullible or innocent, I'm not blaming the victim, but, innocent people that are maybe not sophisticated in their views of life or the world, and then they get victimized in those two completely different cases, the Indian call center scam and the scam of the so-called vaccine. What do you guys think about that?
I've got some comments already, if I may jump in. Something that I noticed that's different between the rest of you and us in Africa is that whole issue of a high trust society, and it comes out so clearly in these kinds of things. And whites among ourselves, we have a lot of trust, but the trust is created through our whole society and our whole upbringing. And we work on simple things like, I say something to you and you believe it. And that's the end of it and you're happy. And most of our society works like that or used to work like that. But, you know, these Jews are the prime exploiters of that. But you also start seeing it coming in from everybody else. And it's interesting that you're talking about phone scams. Let me tell you about what I've done with my own phone. And I used to even at a point work in the bank for a call center. So the call center is not only receiving calls, but they've also got people calling outwards to make sales. And they got tons of people making sales. And when mobile phones and things came along, I used to get these calls coming in as well from various people, and it used to irritate me. And but later on, in more recent years, the number of calls that I get on my phone that are all just sales or some kind of sales scam is like every call. So when the real bank phones me, then I don't even know, is this the real bank or is this somebody else? And you know, a couple of years ago, I'm talking now maybe 3-4 years ago, I actually stopped the process of using my phone to get calls. I don't take calls at all. And I switch my phones off. And I only use my phone for messaging. And then I message the people that I want to message. But when it comes to phone calls, I don't take phone calls anymore at all. Because I began to realize that, you know what, 99.9% of all calls that I get is somebody trying to either sell me something that I don't want, or it's a scammer. And I eventually even said to the banks, I said to them, don't even phone me, man. If I need to do something with you, I will physically climb in the car and come to you. And it's all because of this scamming stuff. And of course, you also get these criminals. Now these criminals in South Africa, they've been at this just like those Indians that you're talking about that are scamming Americans. Here in South Africa, this stuff's going down all the time. People are phoning you and they're busy with this thing and they're busy with that thing. And then they start asking you questions. And as they're asking you questions, they're actually also engaging in identity theft. So they're starting to make notes about you, and later on they can phone and fake it as you. So, you know, it's interesting that you're mentioning that Indians from India are scamming you Americans, but it's their low trust society versus your high trust society. The reality is, you know, I've thought a lot about this low trust and high trust. And I must tell you that I actually think that high trust is fantastic, because high trust is so wonderful because it makes life so efficient. We don't have to write out contracts. There are lots and lots of things that you can do, and you can do it very quickly and very easily with a high trust society. In fact, when I was doing some financial stuff recently and I was dealing with another financial guy here, had to do with my pension, and we were starting to talk about how things used to be. Nowadays, in South Africa, if you want to do any financial transaction, you'll find that anything, if it's insurance, you name it, whatever you deal with, they'll send you documents and you must sign them. Then they'll send you more documents and you must sign this document and do that and that. I'm telling you, in recent years, I've never seen so much paperwork. In the last 10 years, I've never seen so much paperwork in my life. And then one of the Afrikaans guys I was talking to when I moved my pension, he turned around and he said to me, you know, do you remember a long time ago, we used to just have like one contract. You just have like one thing with a couple of pages and you just signed it once at the end and that was that. And there's the thing done. Nowadays, you've got to, every single thing, they're constantly sending you stuff and you've got to annotate this and sign there. And then there's another bunch of documents and another. I'm not joking with you. If you end up with like five or six different documents and you've maybe just asked like one little question or something. And all of that behavior comes from theft. These people steal and steal. And if you give them a chance, all of our parasites, okay, all of our non-European types, you'll see that they have no problem. They start stealing and lying and stealing and lying, and it just gets worse. It just gets crazier. It gets to a point where they don't even trust each other. And the thing that I'm saying is that, and I've seen other people writing articles. I saw another article exactly on the same theme as what you are saying. I saw an article where somebody was saying that the problem in America is that because people just tell you something, and the line that they used was just they just said so. And just because I said so, and that we're so used to doing things because you've just been told to do it. Somebody just tells you that and you do it. But the reality is that those things are actually wonderful, wonderful things. It means that people trust each other. It means that people listen to each other. And if we get rid of all of our parasites, we function like that. All whites function like that. Everybody functions like that. And it's only a problem now because Jews are destroying trust and lying and bringing in others, and the blacks also lying. At the end of the day, they are all lying and they want to get in on our stuff. And you'll see, they are coming to us. They are moving into our society. And in their society, when they do those things, those people can't function. So I don't know if that kind of makes sense to you, but I can't stress enough the fact that a high trust society has got massive cost benefits. There are massive cost benefits. You just ask someone a question, you trust each other, you move on. They even used to be that thing of, you know, sort of my word is my bond, where men in Europe used to be able to just say something, and the fact that it was said, that's it. That's as good as a contract. And, you know, if you later go and call him a liar or you don't do it, then there's big shit. But, you know, that is actually a wonderful way to live. And so the thing that like messes up you Americans and other whites is that you people have had a high trust society. Now all these garbage are coming into your country and they're turning everything into, they're messing up everything and they're lying through their teeth. And you people just aren't conditioned to be able to handle these people. Whereas for us in Africa, it's much more natural. We know they steal left, right, and center. And the extent to which they steal and lie and cheat will stun you. You know, here in South Africa, there are things that we do that I don't think many other people do. I once even came across, here's something simple for you. We've got metal taps in our gardens, okay, a metal tap for your hosepipe. Well, can you believe that quite a number of years ago, companies started making plastic taps? Why? Because the blacks come and they steal your metal tap. So you buy a plastic tap and you put one on. And this kind of stuff, there are lots of things that you guys still do that we don't even do anymore. We stopped doing those things because there were so many scams. These people steal like you cannot believe. And, you know, even thinking back to that other stuff that I was talking to Brandt about earlier, about the clashes between the whites and the blacks in the Cape hundreds of years ago at the Great Fish River. When I was refreshing my mind on that and reading through, I saw that back then, the problem was already that why did the blacks cross the river to come to the Boers? They were coming across the river and coming closer and closer to the Boers because the Boers had lots of cattle and the blacks were stealing the cattle. So then it turned into a whole freaking clash over the cattle, and the whites eventually had to shoot them and chase them away. And in actual fact, in South Africa right now, we're actually heading down exactly that same path, where we're going to get to a point where the whites are functioning okay, and the blacks need our stuff. They need to come and steal more of our stuff. So those are my comments. Those are my comments on it. Welcome to
Jan. Yeah, go Jan. Do you mind if I come in here and make a few comments?
Go for it.
Okay. First off, these problems are worldwide. It isn't just America. It's just that America had so much, and now it's lost almost everything, which began well over a century ago. But the point is that until Jew influence is eliminated, like I say on my emails, first thing first, eliminate Jew influence, we're not going to know how much other evil there is in the world until Jewish influence is eliminated. And so that's always the first step before any long-lasting solutions to any significant problems are possible. Now, you know, listening to the senior scam, yeah, that's been around a long time, and Jews are great at that, but they're not the only ones. But other people learn from Jews. Jews may have initially started such things, or they may have co-opted these ideas from other creative scammers. You know, the Jew isn't necessarily the most creative crook on the block. It's just that the Jew is the greatest organizer of evil that there ever has been in the history of known mankind. So my point is that we must maintain focus on eliminating Jew influence. And any problem that we address, when you get down to the final summation of that problem, it has to include, number one, eliminating Jew influence. How do we vector this into the elimination of Jew influence? Because I can guarantee you, when Jewish influence is eliminated, that's just the beginning of our problems.
I do agree that Jews have started so many things, Bob. I mean, they've opened the doors to the racial conflict between blacks and whites here, and between whites and others here in South Africa. And yeah, the I see them as like the prime criminal, the original parasite. From them come all other forms of evil.
Yeah, here in this country, in America, I get a kick out of people that are up in arms about maybe losing their Second Amendment rights of bearing arms, and these people don't have the balls to use them. And most of the right wingers think that, well, bearing arms, we'll have a little militia. No, that's an impossibility. You're not going to defeat the military force of America with anything. There's no way. However, 50,000 Joseph Paul Franklin teams, that's a different story. That could actually begin what I believe America will become in the future, which is a warlord state and warlord states. And I don't think there's any other way that America can continue the way it's going right now. in some way. This is my opinion, obviously, but this is what's coming up. And along this line of thinking, where does the Jew come in? How do we, you know, really the bottom line is, what steps can we take to eliminate Jew influence? And anything that goes toward that direction is a step, I believe, in the correct direction.
On that note, I think there's small things people can do, and then there's big things people can do, but and all of them are important. You know, there's a lot of people I know that have chosen years and years ago to stop watching TV, for example. And so that's cutting out one major area in their life where they can, you know, they can get different media, or they can start thinking about things with their own eyes instead of constantly being brainwashed. And then there's bigger things, but you know, I'm kind of at the point personally, you know, where I think we're not going to vote our way out of this mess.
Now you're talking. I definitely think so. And we in South Africa are already way past that thing. I had somebody ask me a couple of weeks ago, a lady that I know well, a professional lady, and she's in the medical field. And she was saying to me one day, she said, "Jan, what are we going to do?" And I said to her, "Man, you can't vote your way out of this. There's, you know, the problems run deep. These problems have been quietly brought on over a period of time. But you're right, do small. There are all kinds of things. Like one thing that I was thinking of that falls into the category of small, but it's easy to do, is I'm constantly watching our parasites, whichever ones you're looking at, whether you're looking at Jew parasites or the lesser or the black plague parasites. And the one thing that I see over and over here in Africa is how whites are constantly helping the enemy. And I'm trying to say to people, you know what? There are people that you must stop being nice to, man. Stop helping other people. You know, if you're going to help anyone, help whites. And there are lots and lots of things that people do. In small ways, people help other races. And they pay them money. They help them if they're in trouble, etc., etc. And they should really be redirecting that to whites. And then on a bigger scale, you get businesses and other people who come and they're constantly saving the government. And in South Africa, the government doesn't know left from right. And they are so useless, but they also don't care. They are evil and they want to run the country. But all they are concerned with is power. And but whenever things go wrong for them, whites, you'll see how many times it's whites, or it's Jews with money hiring whites, and then they go and they help the blacks. And I'm looking at these things and I'm saying, you know, we could have rather let the country start collapsing so that we can break free. And in that sense, Bob, you're way ahead of other people. That warlord thing is something I've been thinking of for us, that we're going to end up as a warlord situation. Your one is still further away, but I think that is ultimately where one heads to. And
well, here in America, it's closer than you think. By the way, most white people are assholes. You take a look at the mask wearing. Voluntary mask wearing. Anybody who wore a mask voluntarily, I'm not talking about the job or going into a store, you know, who cares? And that's a bad place to make a scene too. I mean, it's stupid to reveal your position. You know, we're talking military here. You got to understand, when you reveal your position, people take notice, and the Jews are always profiling, and their sycophants are always profiling, looking for edges, ways to get in, honeypots, etc. My point is, though, that I initially said, most white people are assholes, just like most other people. They just go along to get along, don't think. And maybe they're not really assholes all the time, but they are when they wear a mask voluntarily, aren't they? And the thing is, it's leadership. It's been a lack of leadership. That's why everything that people like Tom Metzger and when I had my show, I didn't care about who was listening. I'm trying to dig out the leaders. And the leaders are the ones that get things done. Everything else just don't matter. And the key right now is that these Jews are going, it's like the drug lord said in that old movie, when a system is destroying itself, you step out of the way. And right now, what I'm doing personally, I'm just watching. I'm staying low-key, lone wolf sort of, just anonymous, let's call it that. Lone wolf means you're active. I'm not active. I'm waiting for openings if one appears. If one doesn't appear, fine, I'll get by. But the point is that what's happening now is the system is destroying itself. The big problem that we've got is Russia, is Putin real or is he not real? And we're not going to know that until this Ukraine thing is initially resolved. If he in that government allows these kike Jews of BlackRock and all the rest, Blankfein, those types, if they allow them to come in there in any way, then we know Putin was part of the whole operation anyway. But he's just, whether he wanted to be or not, he is. But we don't know that now. So right now, personally, I'm standing back, watching, looking for opportunities, hoping for the best always. But, hope is, what is that worth? It's like fiat money. But the thing is that we just don't know the future. Nobody knows the future. Even the ones trying to guide the future have to rewrite their script every single day. That's what the media is all about. It's all kaiju script writing. But right now, it's an important time. But I think it's a time where the thing that pisses off the kaiju more than anything else is when we simply survive.
Well, if any of you other guys want to jump in, you're welcome to jump in any time. Otherwise, I'll make some comments. Bob, I agree with you. I also am waiting, and for me, especially here in South Africa, I wish the collapse would move faster. It is already, it's coming along, but it's never fast enough. And the faster it can collapse, and the more chaotic, and the more in a chaotic way that it can collapse, the better. Because most people, Bob, most people just want to solve problems the easy way out. And you are right about the lack of leadership. But that's where the Jews been at work. Jews focus a lot on the people at the top, eh? And if you look at the Jews have been working on destroying our leadership for a long time. And you can go back. Whether it's Adolf Hitler or whether it's any other time, you'll see Jews always crawling around the top. You'll see lots of Jews crawling around the top everywhere. There's not a country where they don't do that.
They're coming. I agree about. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I heard the siren in the background. I said they're coming.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
I agree about, in some sense, sitting back and waiting and surviving. I moved over the mask issue. I refused masks the entire time, and I left a larger city for a smaller place. I spent a lot of time in 2020 on the road looking for the most normal, white, functioning, non-mask wearing places I could find, and I moved because I thought this would last a long time, especially in a big city. And I'm happy with my choice, and I did that out of survival. I can't, I decided not to be make a scene and be a big protester. It was actually quite quite a mess there for a while where I was at. And there were, you know, you could get into trouble with police or security at an establishment, by, as you say, showing your position. So I left. I opted out.
Well, I just wore the mask when they asked me to. And the thing is the voluntary wearing of masks. I don't know if you know it or not. My thing says Bob in DC. I think you figured out where I'm from, but, I got the biggest chuckle of my life. One of them anyway, when the first months of this, you know, it began in March of or so of 2020. Well, so that goes into the summer, and here I'm walking along the Potomac, and here's this guy out on a single sculler, you know, one of these college rowboats. Middle of the Potomac with a mask on. I'm telling you, you know, this is the kind of thing. This guy is not a leader, let me tell you. But he's a good rower, probably in great shape, but he ain't no leader.
Yeah, some strange things. For us, it was illegal to go out into the public for 2 years without a mask. So that was something I absolutely hated. And they even made it that if you're alone in the car, you still have to wear the mask. Otherwise, the cops will pull you off and fine you. So it was so ridiculous. And I'm glad that we got past that. I think eventually there were whites, especially whites with a bit of business money, and they all... I think they were taking the government to court over the mask wearing, but the mask wearing was crazy. But yeah, I understand the voluntary stuff, hey, Bob. In fact, even now, there's like the odd person I come across that I see is wearing a mask, but it's very, very stupid. And yeah. Though I must tell you, the funniest mask wearing that I've seen was in the early part of this COVID stuff. I buy some solar stuff at a big Chinese wholesaler. And the Chinese guy who was like the top bloke, like the manager of the store, he's either the owner and or the manager of the store. And I noticed when COVID came that, interestingly enough, Indians, the Asians, seemed to be the most afraid of COVID. I'm talking shit scared afraid of COVID. And you could see it in the way that they were behaving. But the best that I saw was this Chinese guy. And I'm not joking with you. He was in his store and he had a gas mask on, like a World War One gas mask. I'm not joking. World War One gas mask. And his entire body was covered in a plastic suit, in a see-through plastic suit. I actually took a few photos, but then later I couldn't find them. I thought to myself, I thought of it as the Chinese space suit. And this guy's clearly shit scared, okay? Everybody else, the blacks and the whites, are there with their masks on. But this guy, from head to toe, no kidding. But COVID was the time when I saw the Asians more scared than I've ever seen them ever. And that was quite fun. But this Chinese guy was the top of the pops. So what do you guys think of the banking and stuff? Over here in South Africa, my concern has been electricity. But the banking and the economics in the States, or what are the main things that you guys are seeing that are driving people crazy? I'm seeing lots of black on white crime and nasty stuff.
Yeah, and you're going to have to call on people. You have three polite white men here, so people aren't going to be interrupting each other.
No, be like Africa. Just be like a Jew. Just shove your way in, please.
Brant's been quite quiet for a while. Brant, what do you think?
Well, Let me give you guys a real quick background on myself so you can see the understand how I think about things. So I've been involved in public education for a while, and I have a website to teach little kids and teach teenagers all of these concepts that you guys are talking about right now. And the way that I approach it is I try and take as a picture view as possible and then break it down into smaller lessons at the level that the children can understand cognitively and socially. And I present these concepts, one stage at a time. And also I realize that in order to talk about these things that we're seeing now, we have to have a different language. And there's people that have been using slightly different language than what we've had traditionally for decades. And some of this language has gotten out there now into the common parlance, such as anti-white, anti-whiteism. And I use that language when I'm talking to the kids. And the big core issues that I see is that there is this anti-white narrative, which has run throughout all of Western civilization. And in this anti-white narrative, in this fictional story, white people are born evil. And everything that whites have, they got it because somehow they magically stole it from everybody else. We stole their man hours. We stole their intelligence. We stole their land. We stole everything from them. And the propaganda is so thick and heavy, even in public schools, that a lot of kids, they have no way to get away from that. They're inundated with that constantly. So what I see is it is a psychological battle. And all the things that we've been talking about so far, yes, those are true, but those are just symptoms of the much deeper problem. Even Jews, which are by far the largest problem in my opinion, but white people, or what I call Western kind, because we made Western civilization, so we are Western kind. Without Western kind, there is no civilization. It only exists because we exist. All of our countries only exist because we live there and we built them. We have to regain a sense of identity. If you have a sense of identity, the parasites do not harm you at that point. Parasites cannot infect a healthy host. So our sense of identity has been torn down, I think, like you said, Bob, for over 100 years now. And I think, at least in the United States, that vector was from the Frankfurt School and some of the Jews that immigrated over even in the late 1800s, unfortunately. And the biggest problem that I see in our countries, it's not just Jews, but it is that interaction, that marriage between so-called white elites and Jews with a lot of money. That has just laid us low over and over and over. Yes. And I try and teach examples of that with Woodrow Wilson, Winston Churchill, Franklin Roosevelt. These are key times in some of our nation's histories where we were betrayed instead of being helped. So what I try to do with the kids, especially with the young ones, is teach a sense of identity, who we are, where we came from. And then with the teens, there's also that sense of identity, but I start introducing these other psychological concepts. That hit them heavily with here's the propaganda. This is where it's coming from. This is how you can recognize it. This is how they try to manipulate you through white guilt constantly. They're constantly trying to guilt you. Here's examples of propaganda in movies and TV shows and commercials and videos and your TikTok videos and magazines and everything. Because white people, we weren't defeated by some superior army that came along. We were defeated by words. We were defeated psychologically. So the foundation that has to be rebuilt is this psychological foundation, a foundation of identity.
I agree. And I would go a little farther back, though, Brent. It's not just the late 1800s, but it goes back into colonial America. There were divisions even back then, particularly the Calvinist idea of the elect. That whole idea, although some aspects of it, like the the two guys, Cotton and Increase Mather, you go all the way back to them to do good. Very, there was one aspect of the religious back then, which were not Calvinist, and then there was the other aspect which was Calvinist. And I hopefully you guys know that the Calvinist is basically Jewish. Jacob Cohen or John Calvin, same thing. And it's this whole idea of the elect. And if you have that kind of an elect, then the future is already preordained. And that's complete BS. None of us know the future. We surmise, we guess, we do the best we can, usually using some form of statistics, probabilities that this is probably going to happen. So I better get some insurance over here, or it might go this way. So I better do something over here. We don't know the future though. And once you understand that none of us know the future, I think it opens things up for a clearer view of recognizing opportunity when it comes. But I think you got to go a little bit farther back, and you're right on. You're spot on. It is the WASP elites. What I don't like the term WASP elites, because there are black elites involved with them. There are brown, yellow elites involved. But really, it's the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant elites. They were the key that had the power in America until the Jews eventually, and this actually began actually in the Revolutionary War times, but let's face it, we all know that when the Federal Reserve was created, whether the Jew was part of that or not, probably was, but even if they weren't, that was the end right there. The future of America's wealth and credit were essentially a blank check to the Jew, and that's what happened. That's why the wars were funded. The wars absolutely needed the wars of the 20th century relied on the Federal Reserve of the United States to really take off the way they did. And without that, it would have been a different future, probably the same kind of problem. But these WASP elites absolutely were dominant up until they lost their dominance when the Federal Reserve was created. Then it was the Jewish elites on top of the WASP elites. But overall, even looking back through history, we've always had a problem with our leaders not being loyal to their own people. There was a concept called chevauché has to do with, you know what I'm talking about. It's an idea of essentially kind of like cabinet warfare between groups of tribes of whites, where the ruling families wouldn't kill each other, but they'd have their underlings do it. This is a real problem for white people. It's a problem for all people, not just white people. It's just that when whites are at, when we're at our best, we are the best. But let's face it, are we at our best right now? You know, look what's happening. But all people, too, you know, can take it, individual blacks, browns, yellow, doesn't matter. When they're at their best, they're doing their best. You know, they're different than what we usually see from most of them. But let's face it, when we are at our best, there's nothing better in reality, nature's reality. There's nothing with a better future. Of course, there is going to be a better future. But anyway, I'm sorry I'm ranting so much, but Brent, I'm really happy to hear what you're doing with the young, because it's absolutely necessary, and you have a really good handle on it.
Brent, I also enjoyed what you were saying, and Bob, I'll comment on some of your stuff a bit later. But Brent, you raised lots of issues, and the way that you talk about it is, you know, it's the way that I see it, is that if we're going to fix ourselves, it's work like everything else. It's just that it's like you say, we're being defeated by words. We're being defeated by things that appear to be a certain way and they're actually not. And this to me is also part of the problem of the Jews, is that the Jew is a kind of parasite. You know, we whites, we understand how to function as a group, how to function as a tribe, how to function as a nation. We know that we must organize, we must have a government, we must have an army, we must build this, we must do that, etc. But when it comes to Jews, when I look at history, it's like Jews are a very different form of human, a parasite that has evolved, and this parasite functions among us, and it's developed the methods to disarm us. So when our natural reaction says, get angry, go kill someone, the Jew knows from thousands of times before, this is how he must deal with this and that. Because a lot of what they're pulling off, you know, when they're using money, then they've got physical power in the real world. When they are in government, they've got physical power. But a lot of their other power is nothing more than words and concepts. And boy, can they play around with that a lot. And we just aren't ready to deal with that kind of enemy. It's like a unique enemy that we don't understand. And so the thing is, we don't treat them like the way we would treat a foreign enemy. Somebody did a short video that I have here a long time ago. It was an American. It's actually something I want to use in one of my videos. When American says, you know, we Americans, if you told us that the Chinese are the problem, then we'd say, yeah, let's get up. We got to go and smash the Chinese. You know, if it's somebody else who's the problem, yeah, we're going to smash them. But then if you say it's Jews that are the problem, then it's like, no, no, no. And that is where the difference is. And I think that in our history, our whole natural history has been one of holding territory, defending territory. And we are totally at home in that kind of thinking. But now we've got something different. And this enemy doesn't come at us with machine guns, but he's there, and you can't quite get a handle on it, and you're not quite sure, is he really an enemy? Should I really harm him? And that is the real kind of problem that we've got. We've got an enemy that is a true parasite that we just can't identify. And we haven't developed the responses. But we've had the right responses in the past. We turfed them out or did various things to them in Europe. And I think that we just need to teach ourselves that we've got a new forms of enemy. And I see them as parasites, Jews being the prime one. But there are other parasites. You're going to see the problems of the black parasite. The black parasite has got a different modus operandi to the Jew parasite. And in both cases, the whites are not able to turn around and say, hey, that's an enemy. I need to go and either get a sniper's rifle or a machine gun, and I need to do this. We don't think about them in that way. And when I look at our wars, for example, our wars against each other are very brutal. And I've said to people, even here in South Africa, I've said to whites, you know, look at our wars. When we whites clobber each other, we really are nasty. We smash and slaughter each other. But we don't use that kind of violence and energy against Jews or blacks. Suddenly with them, then we don't have that kind of response. And my own personal viewpoint is that in the future we're going to have to change our views as to what is our enemy. We're going to have to jack up our thoughts.
Jan, so, I agree with the what you said there, and also the last two comments as well. And if I could go back to the propaganda, the tools of the enemy are, you know, like the taking over the leaders, taking over institutions, the Federal Reserve, et cetera. And then, but they have to have the propaganda for that to work, because the propaganda is what gets the, you know, everyday people, to go along with, whatever their particular plans at the moment are. whether that be, you know, take a poison shot or give us your money or give up your gold, like they did in this country shortly after the Federal Reserve was implemented. And I think the skill of this is why teaching to children, I was also so pleased to hear this, because the skill of recognizing it, once you have it, you can't unsee it. I don't have to explain every single movie to somebody who understands this movie by movie. But if they understand it, they can see the message in each and every movie or each and every ad or whatever it may be. But if you've got the fog over your eyes and can't see any of it, then it's a difficult challenge to get somebody to sort of wake up to it. But, you know, I cannot watch now, for example, movies that I watched growing up, without seeing that most of them, you know, I'd say from the 90s on, most of them are just pure propaganda. And I can definitely see a very, particular message in a lot of them that are sold to us as just silly stories about this or that, or comedies or something, but they're actually just very vicious propaganda.
That's interesting about the movies, Brent, because I also find myself that I can't watch movies anymore, and I go even further back than the 1990s. I now look at all kinds of things and music and everything, and I say to myself, look at this, look at that. And there's the Jew influence. You know, take something that I loved when I was a kid, Star Trek. And now when I look at Star Trek, I'm like, oh, man. You know, there were not only main Jewish characters in there, but look at what Star Trek was feeding us. Star Trek was feeding us diversity in space. And there it is, right in front of your eyes. Everybody of every race is in space, but in reality, the people who really lead the way in everything is actually whites. So, you know, there's lots of stuff that I see, and then it disgusts you. But I do agree with you. Hey, you make a good point that the first stop is the propaganda, is waking people up. And from what I can see, there's a lot of stuff that show me that people are losing it. Even when I was looking around, the numbers of people who are either quitting their jobs, resigning, and even when people give up their jobs, they don't come back. There's a lot of stuff that's very, very weird.
Jan, you're right on. And one thing just came to me. I was thinking about. By the way, that was Mike that made that last comment, I believe, not Brant. But one thing that came to me as you were talking is the problem with Jewish control of media is repetition. You know, it's and it goes way back. I remember I have different eyes now, and you can see movies from the 50s, probably others going even much farther back than that. But obvious movies in the 50s, like The Searchers with, what's his name? The big Western guy. I can't even think of it.
John Wayne.
John Wayne. Thanks. Yeah, getting older. But, you know, movies like that and Giant. With Jimmy Dean, the last scene had a Mexican baby and a white baby in the same stand-up crib. You know, it's that kind of stuff goes way back. The Jews have been at work, let's face it, for 2,000 years plus, in one way or another. I mean, this goes back to the Roman Empire. They didn't have photographs back then, but they did have porn artists. And some of the emperors, I forget what the name of the one guy was, Titus, I think, was a big addict on scroll porn, you know. It goes way back. It's an ongoing problem of what I call Jew think, you know. And the big problem is that many of these WASP elites were Jew thinkers It didn't take much to spur them into that. And what it basically is, Jew think for a non-Jew especially, is essentially boils down into one thing, and that's greed. Some form of greed, selfishness, me only type approach. And it goes into political systems too. And anyway, I just thought it was interesting that the idea of media and the redundancy, the repetition of media, that's the real key. It's repetition, repetition, repetition. And on the other side of this is my bottom line I wanted to get to, is a lot of times when we keep harping on one thing, and people will say, oh, no, because we always want to do something else. And the one problem with truth is it's boring. It's always the same. So people want to do something else. Well, they want to look at something else. So there's got to be something else, right? That can't be the truth. We got to find something else. There ain't anything else. The other thing you're going to find out there is some kike Jew meme. And, you know, if you're dealing with raw truth, that's it. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that I hear it in the right wing, the commentators and stuff, you can see just recently a group has been doing this exact thing. They have to do other things instead of just keep harping on the Jews. Well, I'll tell you what, that's a Jewish asset that promotes that idea. I'm sure they don't want to be, but they are. No, first thing first, eliminate Jew influence.
Yeah, the Jew is the prime problem, I look on these people not just as parasites, but also as a type of cancer, and you leave the cancer alone, and it gets worse and worse, and you know, our race has forgiven these people too many times. I see that by letting them back in, forgiving them, letting them back in, it just makes things worse. Just makes things worse. I was looking at Spain, for example. There was Spain, the Spaniards tossed the Jews out for 500 years, and they've now let them back in the recent years. And there you go, transgender, there we go. The whole rigmarole's already started there in Spain. Jews are back, same shit.
Yeah, Jan, that's a good point. And one of the things that I stress with the kids is tradition and why we have tradition. And I give the example of when I was a little kid, I thought tradition was stupid. Like, why do I have to wear these clothes on Sundays? Or why do we do this on Thanksgiving or whatever? There was no reason to it. And then when I became older, I realized the value of tradition, because what tradition does is it keeps the parasites out, because you do not allow those influences to weave their way into your culture, because you already have a culture. You already have an identity because you have this tradition. Now, that the tradition might be that you put presents out for Santa Claus, or you know, milk and cookies out for Santa Claus. Or maybe you have another tradition where you wear a pineapple on top of your head. The exact thing that you do is not important. What is important is that you do it, your relatives do it, the rest of your people do it, your parents did it, their parents did it, on back out into time, and then your offspring are going to be doing that as well. So tradition is extremely important in developing a sense of identity. So you're not allowed, so these people can't come in from the outside. One other thing too that's kind of associated with what you guys are talking about that I haven't made any videos for yet is asymmetric warfare. So asymmetric warfare is easily understood when you have an empire invading another country, and you have guerrilla fighters, underground fighters, etc. But people do this on a psychological level as well. This is the way that women get back at men. They're not strong enough to fight men, so they'll lie about them. They'll do something underhanded. They'll use sex as a weapon. They'll try to guilt their man. They'll do things like that. This is what Jews do inside of white countries. They use asymmetric warfare. They figure out what is the one thing or this suite of weapons that I have that I can leverage as powerfully as I can, because I can't defeat these guys hit on in a military battle, which is what whites have always excelled at. So recognizing all of these threats early on is the first step in, but like what Bob was saying, getting rid of that Jewish influence, because people have to realize that they're being manipulated before they can ever start getting rid of these things. They have to know what those markers are. And once you teach kids how to recognize these things, then all of that anti-white propaganda works to our favor, because it reinforces what we're already teaching them. They can see this propaganda over and over and over and over and over, and then they can teach others.
Jews have chosen war against whites by that name. Now think about it. Just in the last 10 years or so, it has increased that it's white people. What? Always in the past, before that, it was by implication, but no, this is in their media, their control. Well, you got to understand what war is. And I'm going to explain something about war, which maybe you didn't think about before. But in war, you kill the enemy. And I mean, literally, you kill the enemy until the war is resolved. And there's some kind of a surrender or peace. But that's what war means. Literally, you kill the enemy. That's what's happening in Ukraine right now. White people, to me, what I see in Ukraine is depopulation. Obvious to me. This is a depopulation operation by kike Jews. They set up, they profiled Putin and Russia to do what they're doing. And I don't blame them at all. I mean, here they've got this monster right on their border. Of course, they're going to react. But still, their assets of the kike Jew for right now, depending on how they react once they win that war, which if there is a way to win that war the way it's going right now, I don't know. I don't know that future. My point, though, is that in that war, they're killing each other, literally killing each other. And they're depopulating Ukraine. Now, are they depopulating Ukraine to create a Khazaria too, a little Israel too? I think many Jews have even said that in the Israeli press. They come right out and say it. So this is clear. But my point is that the Jews have chosen war against white people by name. We either win or we lose.
Yeah, you got a good point about Jews coming after us. Brant, I like your psychological stuff. I really do. You know, something that I saw the communists doing with the blacks here in Africa, and of course these communists were Jews, but we also had Russians as well. And I actually have an interesting interview that I want to still put up as a separate audio. It's where I talked to some blacks who were involved in these things. And one of the things that I picked up from reading as well as talking to blacks and talking to others is the blacks explained that they were taught what you could call the term that was used was political education. And these blacks, to this day in South Africa, blacks are very aware of politics, and they're extremely aware to a level that whites don't really realize. And the blacks know a lot of the strategies and the tricks. And this all comes from what they were taught by Jews and Russians in the past. And for example, I'll give you an idea how aware the blacks are. Is that in South Africa, we also have liberals, like in America. But in South Africa, the two areas that Jews control in politics totally is liberalism and communism. You'll find the Jews crawling all over communism, crawling all over liberalism. But you won't find Jews in the right wing. That's not their area. Right wing, that's for whites. But anyway, so the original...
Wait a minute, Jan, wait a minute. Are you saying you won't find Jews in the right wing, or is it the right wing blacks?
I'm talking here in South Africa, in the normal right wing here in South Africa.
No. There's Jews all over. Jews are on every. No. I can't accept that. Jews are behind every issue, every significant issue. You're going to find a Jew, up, down, sideways, backwards, forwards. You'll find a Jew there. And no, I won't accept that.
You'd have to name some here in South Africa.
Maybe South Africa's different, but if not Jews, Jew thinkers. I know in America, in fact, one of the things that have been confusing people for the last 50, 60, 70 years is that Jews were equated with the communists, the left, and never the right. And then the neocons came along, and they were supposedly right-wingers, but they're all Jews, or at least 99% of them, 95% of them are Jews. But my point is that ideology is not the thing. Ideology is like a system. Ideologies can be good or bad. Most ideologies will work in one situation rather than another situation. But the point is, who's driving the bus? Who's behind it? And yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe in South Africa, everybody that is considered right wing, there are no Jews. I think you just got to look a little deeper. I know in America, they're all over the place. Left wing, right wing, middle. It doesn't matter. The problem is the Jew. And you're talking about blacks, following. Of course, blacks can be very. I mean, when they go wild and they call it wilding here in America, I mean, it's just unbelievable. What, white people don't? I see it all the time. All the time. It's just you don't emphasize it. Maintain focus on the Jew. I know it's hard to do. I know it's almost impossible to do, particularly coming from you there in Africa with the black problem right in your face. Well, we got a big black problem here too, but it's not like you've got. You've got it is more in your face. And the sad thing is that most of the blacks in South Africa are not initially from South Africa. They were brought in by the whites and the Jewish connected big company owners who brought them down as scab labor 100 years ago. Many were brought down. So, but I can't accept that right-wing Jews are, that's not their proclivity. No, the Jew clones itself onto power, wherever power is. Right-wing, left wing, any place, whatever name you want to give power, you're going to find the Jew screaming and clawing its way in there. And I don't mean to take you on this, but it happens to be a major, major problem. In fact, it is probably the biggest problem of the ideological white scene, so to speak, is not recognizing that the Jew is all over the place. Any place where there's power, that's where the Jew is. Now, I can't accept that. Like I say, you may be right about South Africa, but I don't think so. You just haven't looked deep enough.
When I was talking about the white right, I'm talking about the hardcore white right, not just the soft people. You know, you won't find any Jews like in things that were like the AWB or anything like that. There were no Jews around in those things. So,
He was a Jew thinker. I mean, the people that killed him were employees of his that he allowed in that close.
Eugene Tiblant.
I couldn't remember his name, yeah. And he was a good guy, and he was a big leader, but, he's a right-winger, but he also had the Jew think inside of him.
Okay, but in that case, you're talking about Christianity, because I know about the Christianity being the weakness in the white right here in South Africa. But I do take your point regarding America. I understand your point about America, that you'll find Jews everywhere. You're dead right about that. But in South Africa, it's a little bit different on the hardcore white right. But the other thing is also the real racialists in South Africa are not that many anymore. But But when you get into the whole Jew thinking thing with Christianity, that's slightly different. I do understand what you're saying. I do understand what you're saying. But that's different to having Jews in the movement that are actually doing things. Whereas if you go to the liberals in South Africa, you can actually see all the Jews there. There they are. Their names are there. Tony Leon, Helen Ziller, Helen Suzman. There's tons and tons of them. And if you go to the communists, you can see the Jews there. You can see the Hamels. Joe Slovo, Ronnie Casrils. You can see those names there. And you'll even see Jews in the black areas, like we've got, let's call it the new black communists. And those communists are, they call themselves the EFF, Economic Freedom Fighters, but they're actually communists. Mm-hmm. And every single, quotes, white person that you see around the EFF, every single one of them is a Jew. You'll see that I've looked at a lot. But in the true sort of Nazi type thing, you're not going to find actual Jews there. The Jews in South Africa, the Jews have clearly marked out all the places where the blacks are, and they are there, and they were the prime movers in creating the problems between the whites and the blacks. There was something I was going to say. About black political education, is that the blacks in South Africa, when you know, and as you say, the Jews move around, Bob, the Jews also, in the same way, they do lose certain, they also have a time where they lose control, eh? And to give you an example where they lose some influence is like with the ruling party. The very thing that they started, and they still back it, but they don't have exactly the same kind of control they used to have like 20 years ago. So what you've got is the Jews moving to liberalism, and they pump their money into liberalism, and then they're trying to use the liberal platform to get black votes. So if they can't get the votes from the blacks at the one end, they try and get the votes from the blacks at the other end. And that has actually been a big flop for the Jews. They've gone to tremendous lengths to come and try and play the same game that they play in America with the blacks in South Africa. But the blacks in South Africa, when they see these white faces, the blacks are actually suspicious. And despite maybe almost 20 years of efforts to get blacks to vote liberal, the Liberal Party in South Africa is known as the DA, the Jews have actually failed. And whereas the blacks feel much more comfortable whenever it's communist related. When it's communist related, then they feel, yeah, we're okay. But the point being that simply people can be educated.
Jan, one thing you might try with these blacks, because I know you being in South Africa, and I see it here, but particularly there in South Africa, I hear it all the time, it's the blacks this, blacks that. But really, if they had just their place and white people had their place, we wouldn't have a problem. The big problem was when these mine owners and others brought down the scab labor. That's when it really, really got bad. But there was the Boer problem against the English earlier, and they brought black labor in too in the 1800s for the diamonds and the gold. That was a real problem. But one concept you might get across to these blacks is the concept of the Kike Jew. And the Kike Jew, at least the way I look at it, and I think I was the first one to ever use that word, about 23 years ago, I shut down the most popular gold commentary site in the world at Kitco, but I just went nuts, you know, as you see I can do. But the thing is, the concept of the Kike Jew is very simple. Jews are not white people, and they know it. And you can show this to blacks, and they'll really like it, because the example you use is Morgan Freeman Jr., who is a very good actor. He's always taken good parts, too. I always like the movies that he's in. Morgan Freeman Jr. is the black actor. And he was doing an interview once, and it was about Black History Month, and he said, well, I don't believe in Black History Month. I'm an American, this kind of thing. But that's not the point. Near the end, he asked the interviewer, well, you as a white man, what do you think? And the interviewer was Mike Wallace, and Mike Wallace said, I'm a Jew. I'm telling you right now, you can take that and just tell them, search the internet for Morgan Freeman and Black History Month and Mike Wallace, and they'll see it. These blacks will see it, and they'll see. No. See, that's what a Kike Jew is. A Kike Jew is a Jew with white characteristics, but he's not white. He is not a white person. There are other types of Jews, the Kaifeng Chinese Jew, which is very interesting, and Falashan Black Jews, and Benami subcontinent Indian Jews, dotless Indians. By the way, the Kaifeng Jew is quite interesting. There's a photograph from 1971 of, it's Mao Zedong on the right, and Henry Kissinger facing each other on the left, and I swear it's like they're looking in a mirror. You can hardly tell them apart, you know. Wow. And it's said that Mao is a Kaifeng Jew, or was it? Who knows? That's a rumor. But it does make sense. It does make sense. So anyway, my point is that if you take these blacks and not look at them as an adversary, but as a potential ally in a the approach to take is a non-aggression type approach. I'm not saying that you get close to them. In fact, you want them in their place, us in ours. But if you take this idea of the Kike Jew and understand that what it really means is the Jew with white characteristics, then you can make a differentiation for these blacks between a Jew and a white person, a true white person. Anyway, that's why my little rant there.
What I can say in response to that is that the Jews regard South Africa as anti-Semitic, and the main anti-Semites are actually the blacks, because the blacks hate Israel. And I think recently they even downgraded. I think they recently downgraded South Africa's embassy in Israel. So from the time of the communist stuff, because in the time of the Cold War, the blacks were armed by the Russians and Chinese, but especially the Russians. And, you know, there are many places in Ukraine now that you see them fighting. And actually, blacks from South Africa were in those cities just a few decades ago. Places like Odessa and so forth are places that the Russians took the blacks to and trained them. There was even a time when there were no black countries in Africa that would actually give these blacks who rule us now, the ANC, they would not give them a base anywhere in Africa. And the Russians had to take them out of Africa and chuck them in the Ukraine for a good number of years until they could eventually find Tanzania, which used to be German East Africa, and they could eventually bring them back in there. But I want to just tell you a little bit about the blacks and the Jews, because of the Russian stuff and all those allies from the Cold War, the Russians and Chinese, the Russians and Iran, the Russians and Syria, the Russians and Libya, and all those places. And also the Russians and Cuba. All of those ties still exist to this day, and you can see it in action right now, even in the Ukraine war. In fact, there's this debate in South Africa about whether Putin should be arrested, And the blacks are not keen. The ruling party is not keen at all about arresting Putin. In fact, I don't believe for one second that the ruling party of South Africa will arrest Putin. No way in hell. Because everything they have, they owe to the Russians. And Putin's been here before, by the way. I was looking at my old website, and I've still got to fix some other stuff on it. But on my old website, I actually had photos and stories from Putin's 2006 visit to South Africa. And I was actually going through articles there. And I've got a juicy story for you. And when Putin came, I can get all the photos and stuff out, but so that people can see it. Because Putin came in 2006 and he signed some deals here in South Africa with the then President Mbeki. But I actually published a story back then when he was here that shortly after he'd arrived, he actually requested a meeting with the Jew billionaire Oppenheimer, the guy who owns most of the mining in South Africa. And so he requested a meeting, a private meeting with Oppenheimer. And that was in the press, and I did post that. So I can always go and find that. But anyway, so to show you how the blacks are stuck is that the Russians and Chinese and, you know, let's call it the Eastern Bloc, okay, they were focusing all their energy on the Palestinians. And so Israel was the thing that they fought against. And so the blacks in South Africa have got lots and lots of, they have lots of support and sympathy for the Palestinians. And they get very irritated about what Israel does to the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And so they are anti-Semitic, but their anti-Semitism is directed against Israel. So whereas Nelson Mandela, if you look into the history of Nelson Mandela, and I did put out a video, I don't know if you saw it, about Nelson Mandela and the Jews. Nelson Mandela was a black who was just, he was surrounded by Jews, man. Nelson Mandela's first boss was a Jew called Lazar Sedelsky. And there are photos of him. There are books. I've come across the books about Mandela and his boss. And it's interesting that Mandela became a lawyer and worked for a Jew. And then after he'd worked for a Jew for some time, he turns into a white-hating, raving communist terrorist. I discovered even photographs. There are lots of Jewish tributes in South Africa to Nelson Mandela, our prime enemy, the leading enemy of the whites. There are Jews who've put out all kinds of little books and things to do with their meetings with Mandela, etc. The most interesting photos I got was that Nelson Mandela and his wife, Winnie Mandela, were like house friends of these, quotes, white Jews in apartheid South Africa. And Mandela was actually married in the house of a Jew. The Jews were the Hamels. I've put out the photos in the video that I did about Mandela and the Jews. If you want the link, I can give it to you. And so the Hamels, who were the Hamels? It turned out that the father of the family, I forget his first name, he was the editor of the African Communist. The African Communist being the journal of the Communist Party of South Africa. So Hamel was the editor of that. Hamel's wife made Winnie Mandela's wedding dress, and the photos are there of the wedding done at the house. So, you know, here were the Jews already preparing the black who's going to be fighting us. And later on, when it gets to the Rivonia trial, that's a story that I need to finish as a separate story. But when the whites caught Mandela, and there was that famous Rivonia trial, they caught a bunch of blacks, one Indian, and a bunch of Jews. And they were all up on high treason. They were supposed to be hanged, actually. They were all guilty of high treason, and they should have been hanged. Anyhow, I'm not going to go into the whole story why everybody got off the hook, and the worst that they got was a couple of decades in jail. And there,
well,
there was,
it's Jan again. It's the Jew glomming onto power and then taking care of business when he gets caught. They weren't hung, and the reason they weren't hung was the Jew. But
absolutely, I'm with you on
thing,
that. Totally with.
I've developed over the last, let's say that I've been aware of this topic, or Jew-wise, or whatever you want to call it, for I think 6 years, and I've gone through different iterations. And the my most recent thing, just in the way that I think, as far as what I think is the most important, is the sort of idea that it takes two to tango. I said, so what do I do? What do I want my community to do? Like, okay, the Jews do all the porn. Okay, so how about if I boycott it and don't watch it? You know, so I don't think we're going to ever stop them from making all these movies, but we don't have to watch them. You know what I mean? So I don't know. That's kind of my, I have a view right now that there's limited usefulness in always pushing back to blame somebody else. I want to know what I can do. I want to know, how can we rebuild? How can we build a new money system? How can we have new entertainment? And I think some of that is actually happening. I see it. I see signs of hope, you know, all around us.
Now, that's interesting, because Brandt was all positive and he was busy solving problems.
Understanding Jews is part of an education, but white people have to start taking responsibility for what they do.
I agree with that 100%.
I like it.
I want to be able to. I want to be able to watch something and know it's poison ivy. Whereas 20 years ago, I'm 50, so, you know, 20 to 30 years ago, I didn't know I was watching poison ivy. Now I can watch it and sit back and laugh and go, wow, it's right in your face. But I know it and I understand it. And I can, if I can teach somebody how to see something using, you know, like the movie example, then I look at it as I'm arming somebody. Rather than, what am I going to do? I mean, how am I going to delete the influence? What am I going to do? Go to the studio office and protest and hold a sign up and say, yeah, these people made this terrible Jewish movie with a Jewish message. No, I just want to teach people to see through it and then not, and of course not pay for it, you know, not participate in it in that sense.
I like. We think in terms of solutions, and Brandt explained his solutions the best.
And I like what Brandt said about teaching children to see something, because once you learn it for life. And maybe Brandt does something that negates hundreds of millions of dollars of propaganda in one child's mind at a time, and gives them the tools. I mean, that's powerful. I mean, talk about eliminating the influence. That's the most powerful thing. One person at a time that isn't influenced or swayed or worse, driven to, feel bad about themselves or driven to molest, mutilate themselves with this new transgender crap. Through knowing and being able to see it.
Agreed. You know, Brandt, I was also, I find myself many times thinking that with regard to us, and I'm looking at people in South Africa, whites in South Africa, and I'm just saying to myself that literally every problem is simply a lack of education. And the thing that I'm thinking is, that what we need is political and racial education for whites. If you teach whites about race and about politics and about how things really work, That's all they need to know. And then from there onwards, like you guys say, you can just go ahead, and it's a skill that you've got for life, and you'll be able to easily do your thing and survive.
Yeah, it's a good point, Jan. Our people haven't had control of public education for a while, and we certainly haven't had control of media. We don't control the dissemination of information or propaganda. And our people are naturally trusting. We're a high trust society. We've been very naive. It's easy to fool old people. It's easy to fool kids. And it's easy to fool everyone in between, because we're head over the head with this propaganda all the time. But fortunately, at least for me, I never would have woken up if I hadn't had access to the internet. And I started seeing little things pop up here or there. And I'm a questioning person. And I thought, well, wait a second. What this guy right here says makes more sense than what I've heard on the news all these years. And this guy, what he says right here, that explains like this, these weird things that I've heard about World War II, they don't make any sense, you know. And because I'm a school teacher, I know how to break this stuff down for kids, even though it's different doing it online than it would be in a classroom. So it's just naturally – it's natural for me to approach it with that angle.
So what exactly was it that woke you up, Brent? And I'm going to ask the same thing of Mike.
Well, the very, very first thing that woke me up, it might sound a little silly, was when Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were running for president, and Donald Trump made reasonable remarks about anti-white immigration coming into the United States. And I thought, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then there was a ton of a backlash towards him. And I thought, why are people acting like this? This is a bit weird. I need to know why people are acting this way, and why they keep supporting all of these people coming in and destroying what is America, because America was built and maintained by white people. You can have other people here too as well, but it only exists because white people are here. That's part of it. And the other part of it was right before that time period where I was out of teaching for a few years. I was going to go back into teaching, and I wanted to go back and teach in Europe because I had taught in England before. And when I was contacting these school districts, I was noticing that a lot of these schools had Muslim administration instead of Norwegian or French or Dutch. And I thought, what the hell is going on? Why are all these Muslims in Europe? So then I started looking online, and then, you know, one thing just leads to another. And I thought, holy crap. All of these last couple years where I'd see these little stories about Swedish women getting raped by Arabs, and I thought it was just made up, and these Swedish women are all bloody and beat up. It was real. And I thought, like, how the hell did I not know this before? How come nobody told me? Nobody told me. And then I got angry. And I think once –
But that should have been news. That should have been a big deal. Like, hey, this is happening. But it's silenced instead.
Right. And then the next question then is, how come I wasn't told? How come this wasn't on the news? Who controls the news? So the dominoes just keep falling if you want to keep going. So anyway, that's what happened with me, Johan.
That's very interesting. Everybody's got a different story, and at the end of the day, it leads back to Jews and race. And Mike, what woke you up?
I was in New York for business in 2017 or 18. And I had, some time to kill one evening because I can't remember if I was done with what I needed to do, or I was waiting the next day to go out of the city where I needed to do what I was there for. And I decided to go watch a Broadway play. And I just looked, okay, well, you know, it was probably middle of the afternoon. I looked, all right, what can I buy a ticket to? What's available? Blah, blah, blah. And I bought a ticket to, I can't remember the name of the play, but it's kind of famous, and it's about a woman who bakes pies. So, when I tell you I was not awake at all before this, I was awake that 9/11 is the story they told us is fake. I mean, I was awake to various things, but not at all to this particular question. So I went to see this play. And I might have, at that time, I might have been awake to the sort of out of control black on white crime. And I think by that time, I may, or shortly thereafter, I may have started corresponding with this. There used to be this journalist, sadly, he passed away, but he used to run like a little blog cataloging all the brutal black on white crime in the United States. His name will come to me in a second. I'm not doing good with names today for some reason. But anyway, so I watched this play, and the plot was an abusive white working class guy who, was physically abusive to his wife. She wanted to escape a relationship. She had a job baking pies in a bakery. And she, according to the story, one day slipped up and accidentally had sex with her husband because she was desperate and got pregnant. So she goes to a gynecologist who's a Jew and has an affair with him every time she goes to the gynecologist, with the blessing of the Jewish doctor's Jewish wife. So she's like, yeah, you can play with that thing. And the story goes on and on. And then she divorces him because she finally has the courage to say what a terrible, abusive, horrible white guy he is. And the story just, I can't remember the middle, but it's just a very anti-white. It just builds and builds and builds, you know, that this white guy is so terrible. And basically the story ends that some benefactor gives her the bakery. And then she is the owner, you know, the end of the story, she's the owner of the bakery. She's got her baby and her need for a white man. So that play is actually what woke me up, because it's so overtly anti-white. I used to participate on a men's forum, and I wrote a sort of criticism of the play, how terrible the story was and how anti-white it was. And someone responded to my blog post or my comment post, if you will. Oh, this is just a Jewish, typical Jewish writer. It's written by a Jewish woman. It's produced by a Jewish woman. And I just literally was like, wow, wait a minute. Well, oh my gosh. And it just clicked. And of course, after that, I looked more and more and more into it. And I realized the main source of the anti-white discreditation and hatred and so on. And that's how I woke up, was literally a Broadway play. Which wasn't meant to wake you up. It was meant to brainwash you and tell you how terrible whites were.
Wow, that is interesting. That is interesting. But yeah. It's wonderful. You know, I have yet to meet two people who've got a similar story of how they got red-pilled. And then once they're red-pilled, they end up going the whole way. It may lead from this to that to that to that, but eventually it takes you all the way. That is fascinating. So you guys have changed in the last 10 years. You've changed a lot in the last 10 years. And that's excellent. And I'm coming across people changing all the time. It is excellent. And I think people are losing their shit as they're realizing, you know.
Yeah.
And people... And when I look at a lot of things, I think people are really losing their minds. And even among my own supporters, I've had people come to me and tell me about how they struggled with their jobs, or left their jobs, or changed their jobs, or things that they're doing, and they're just not the same people that they were 5 years ago. You know.
For me, it took a lot of time to implement some things in my life, but I reached a point, of course, for me, the masks were the last straw. when I reached the point, it was not just masks. It had been culminating in me to leave a big city. I paid a huge amount of rent to a very, very particular type of Jewish landlord. And I just said, why do I volunteer for these things? Why don't I live somewhere else? Why don't I opt out? Why don't I just get away from it and eliminate as many of these things, you know, from my life as possible? And I did. And I find every day I see functioning little, they're pockets. They're not, it's not like, oh, this state is great. God has, you know, I don't think there's any state in the United States that's perfect or great. It's pockets. It's places where you can turn all the rest of the stuff off and you can talk reasonably to people. You know, you can make a joke. You can make a racial joke, for example, to somebody, and nobody gets offended, and everybody has a good laugh. They may not be completely red-pilled or something, but you can just go about your normal life and see things the way you want to see them, and not necessarily, you know, there's different. I think there's different steps of how deeply you are living like a liberal and living serving a belief system that's not. It's not yours. It doesn't support your life. You know, living with a parasite, you know, taking all your energy. You know, it's a gradient. How far on that gradient do you want to live? How in what way do you want to live? And I think that's where I don't find the first part of the conversation as useful because okay, next step is what? You know, even if it's small, I like to see somebody doing something for their lives. I enjoy riding around. I do a lot of, I don't like staying home. I do a lot of riding around, whether it's just to explore or whether it's a part of something I'm working on. And I like to observe. I like to talk to people. I like to see people, you know, doing something for themselves, separating themselves from nasty cities, you know, even if they have no idea about Jewish influence, they're doing what comes naturally to them, you know, and I see that all the time, in pockets, in areas. You know?
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. And, you know, it is nice once you start moving away from that thing. I was thinking recently, I was actually doing a video. And I was thinking about the German term. The Germans used to talk about the gutter press. And when I look at how things are everywhere these days, you know, we are living in exactly that same kind of time. And the stuff that's out there that's being pushed by Jews and by all their henchmen and related groups, it's so disgusting. And I find myself less and less able to even look at movies and things. I switched my TV off 11 years ago.
Wow.
I switched my TV off 11 years ago, and I probably switched my radio off about more than 15 years ago. Never switch on the radio, never switch on the TV. And I just do all my stuff on the internet, and I go and look for what I want. And I must tell you, I'm finding it so much more enjoyable. And you know, once you are dealing with your own kind, and you're dealing with minds that are the same as yours, I'm finding it such a pleasure. And yeah, you know, very interesting about the propaganda of the Jews, because I was. Not long ago, I was also starting to go through stuff about Jews and Hollywood. And I mean, you know, what the Jews have done in America is just insane. And they're busy trying to propagandize you. But it's a good point that you make that in their efforts to propagandize, they can make mistakes and it has the opposite effect. And I see lots of things where our enemies, whether it's the Jews or the blacks, when I'm talking about our racial enemies, where they do things and they're actually not having the effect that they think they're having. And that makes me smile a lot. I see that more and more with time.
Oh.
So, you know, I can see some things. I can see some things happening, and definitely, you know, Brandt, you're making the point that it's just a basic process, eh? That it's just a case of work. You know, when I look at what I'm doing as well, it's not like it's magic. It's not like Jews are winning by magic. Jews can be beaten. All of our enemies can be beaten. It's just that they're waging a kind of war against us that is something that we're not used to. And we ourselves have never been educated to function in this kind of society. Plus, of course, I think there are much bigger issues that need to come about what is going to be done with all these parasites in the future. But the starting point for everything is education, and people have to understand what the problem is. Whites can and will solve this thing. And exactly how they solve it, we're not going to discuss here. But I think that there are many, many things that can be done. But people need to be awakened. And if they don't understand, then, you know, they won't know. It's that simple. It's almost like democracy requires that you need to be educated about all the things about democracy and living in that society. There are things you need to be educated that you aren't taught in school. Nobody ever came and taught you racial things and how other races work and how it can impact you and how it can hurt you.
Right. Because what I found out teaching in school is that the students are receiving some valuable education when they learn how to read and write and add and multiply, etc. But they are also getting propagandized with their social studies classes, history classes, and also this anti-white nonsense leaks into different areas as well. It's pushed in there by the teachers. So a lot of these kids, they don't have a chance at all because there's no one in their life telling them, you're getting propagandized right here. You're getting white guilted right here by your teachers, by your administration, by your parents, by everyone.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. You may be exactly right. There may be literally no one pointing out the other way of seeing all this.
Right. So the more often that we keep pushing the message out there, and the message makes sense, and it's not hyper-aggressive, focused on Jews or anyone else. It's just positive. We're building our own identity. We care about white well-being. We care about protecting our people, just like everyone should protect their own people, including us. If you don't let us protect ourselves, then you're anti-white, and you can go fuck yourself. We're going to take care of ourselves because we have every right to do that. We have the moral high ground. See, white people, they want to do things that's moral. So the whole conversation has to be reframed so that they understand taking care of yourself and your daughter and your son, that is the most moral thing to do, not giving away your country to all the non-whites. That's just insane, and you've been brainwashed. So once we can flip that switch in people's minds, one person at a time, then we start to move towards this future where then whites can decide how they want to solve all of these issues. We can't solve these issues right now. We don't have any power. We don't have any leverage. But once we have everyone woken up, or enough people woken up and they're on the same team, then they have enough power. They have enough, you know, population density in certain geographic areas, et cetera. They can control the nodes of power. They can control whatever it may be, militias, military, police, et cetera. Then they, at that point, can decide, what are we going to do? Is it going to be benign? Is it going to be aggressive, etc.? But the way that I look at it, that's so far down the road, I don't even need to be thinking about that right now. I have no control over that. But I do have some control over putting some information together that can help kids right now.
Wow. Brandt, that's brilliant. Brilliant. Totally, totally agree with every word you said.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites.